All right. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this Honorable Court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. You may be seated. And good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice. And now, by order of seniority, as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Good morning. Stephanie Stacey.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case today is State versus Cox. And I don't believe that Mr. Cox or anyone for him is going to appear today. Is there anybody here on behalf of Mr. Cox? If not, then Mr. Ralph, here I assume on behalf of the state.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Cox argues that the post-conviction court erred in, one, denying his motion to add exhibits 1 to 15 to the record, two, in denying his post-conviction motion without an evidentiary hearing, and three, in denying his request for post-conviction counsel. As set forth in my brief, and as I'll detail here shortly, we think district court ruling was correct. We therefore ask this court to affirm the judgment below. I'll start with the motion to add exhibits 1 to 15. And I don't see any error here, certainly not an abuse of discretion, which I think is the applicable standard of review. Following his filing of the post-conviction motion, the defendant asked, he filed a motion for leave to add exhibits 1 to 15 to the record, that same language in the body of the motion. And the district court basically denied it as premature, reading it as a request sort of to supplement the evidence to add to the record, which would be done at an evidentiary hearing, which the district court had not ruled was warranted yet.
So what if it was akin to a request for a records review hearing?
Well, I guess they would have had a records review hearing, but that wouldn't be the files and records that are normally adduced at the records hearing. I think this court held in State v. Glover that it was the files and records referred to in 29-3001 are those that existed before the post-conviction action was filed. These, he alleged in his post-conviction motion, based on what he said in his brief, are newly discovered evidence, police reports and such. So it wouldn't qualify as files and records for a records hearing, in my opinion.
Suppose he had attached them to his post-conviction petition. Would that have been improper or being subject to being stricken?
It's tough to say without knowing exactly what exhibits 1 through 15 are. His characterization of them as newly discovered evidence, I think, leans toward them being improper as attachments. But it's kind of a fine line. This court, I think, has allowed attachments to post-conviction motions. He cited a couple cases in which this court considered it. There's other court of appeals cases like State v. Russell, which was one I dealt with a few years back. And I think the gist of it is that attachment would be proper if it's sort of illustrating or showing, showing what the claims are as opposed to a purely evidentiary purpose. But in this case, I don't think he filed them or at least made it clear to the district court that he intended for them to be filed as attachments.
Was he suggesting that this was an error by the clerk's office or other functionaries?
Well, possibly, but his, I mean, his assigned error here was error on the part of the district court for denying the motion. He, I think, probably would also say that, you know, the clerk's office screwed up when they sent the exhibits back. Apparently, based on his motion, he had mailed them.
Isn't that what the trial judge was addressing?
Well, I think the trial judge was simply addressing his request to add them to the record at that point, as opposed to whether the clerk's office screwed up.
So it was his vocabulary that doomed him. He wants to add it to the record.
Possibly, yes. When you're asking to add to the record, I don't think the district court can read his mind to understand that means I'd like them to be attached as exhibits, or attached to the post-conviction motion, particularly where his post-conviction motion doesn't actually refer to them, exhibits 1 to 15, in there, or, you know, incorporate them or reference them as attachments. So
if he had attached them, they would not have been part of the pre-existing record, would they?
No, I don't think so, based on how he described them. No.
Is it possible to read his request as a request to file an amended post-conviction?
I don't think so. I mean, the language of it is simply, you know, I asked for leave to add exhibits 1 through 15 to the record. He explains that the clerk's office sent them back when he filed his post-conviction motion. I don't see how a district court would read that, as a request to file an amended post-conviction motion. And certainly, I guess, even if it could be read that way, or it could be read to say, hey, I'd like you to view these as attachments to the post-conviction motion, certainly not an abuse of discretion to decline to do that based on the language used in the motion, I think.
If we don't know what they were, how do we assess if it was an abuse? So far we got to the point where he used the wrong word. I want to add this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well,
if he had said, I want to attach this stuff to the record, and then we don't know what it is.
I mean, true, there's no, like, offer of proof or anything. There's nothing other than what he says in his brief about what they are.
You wouldn't have an offer of proof without an evidentiary hearing.
True. I guess, but you don't need an evidentiary hearing to decline or to deny this motion when he's asking to add to the record. And I guess I just don't see an abuse of discretion there when an evidentiary hearing depends on the allegations, and it hadn't been determined yet whether they were going to have an evidentiary hearing.
Well, without having an evidentiary hearing, you would never add an exhibit to the record, would one?
Except for the, you know, at a records hearing where you I mean,
that's
true, yes.
That presumably should
right.
be part of the pre-existing
right.
record. Of course, I suspect you know I'm not a fan of records hearings.
Yes.
I think the record is what it is.
And I agree.
All of this nonsense about assembling it is just an extra step.
I agree.
Okay.
Is it fair to say whatever these exhibits were, they were either, one, already in the record and then considered by the court, or two, not in the record and then would have been irrelevant to the decision that was made by the court?
I would agree with that as well. And that's why we think there's no abuse of discretion here.
But on a post-conviction motion, the defendant can make allegations outside the record. That's why we might have an evidentiary hearing, right?
True. Yes. That kind of goes back to my point, though, about as far as attaching something to a motion, it kind of depends. If it illustrates the allegation or makes plain the allegation, or if it's necessary to understand the allegation, which is what I think happened to Stavey Russell, the 2018 case in the Court of Appeals, then that would be appropriate to attach to the post-conviction motion. But simply adding to the record, I think, is more an evidentiary purpose. It's for at the evidentiary hearing, which was premature at this point because we hadn't determined, the district court hadn't determined if an evidentiary hearing was warranted.
I think what the way I read it is he's saying these materials were attached to the petition. Maybe I'm being too generous, right? But got separated by you all's functionaries in the bureaucratic office, right? Mm-hmm. Or an error by the clerk, quote unquote, right? And what do we do if it were an error by a clerk?
Well, I guess I don't see how you can say that they were you know, attachments, if they're never referenced in the motion, they're never incorporated in the motion, they're never asked to be attachments in the motion. Normally you see something like, you know, I've attached Exhibit A, you know, to the post-conviction motion, see that, you know, attachment. There's nothing in there about
that. So that's your reading of the post-conviction motion. There is no reference to this, quote, newly discovered attachment stuff. Is
that right.
How it you
never,
read that motion?
The post-conviction motion never says anything about Exhibits 1 through 15. And so I don't think it's abuse of discretion by the district court to deny the motion to add those to the record, because it didn't. There was no reason or no basis to consider it as an attachment.
Okay. Can I? Because we only have so much time together. If I may, with the agreement of the rest of the members of the court, this is a conviction on the theory. It was submitted to the jury of a felony murder, and the felony is a robbery. Oh, wait, is that where we're at? What is the felony?
Well,
that a record proves beyond a reasonable doubt, or that reasonable persons could have found was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. What is
it? It was robbery or attempted robbery, I think, based on the jury instructions I was also instructed on. That was the underlying felony for the felony murder theory. And the robbery, essentially the evidence at trial was, they had him and the defendant and the victim had set up a drug deal for that night. There was some evidence that the defendant had a bunch of money on him, whether that was paid to another guy or not. The victim had money.
Okay.
When he went to the drug deal, he had withdrawn like $1,150 during the day. And then the evidence was also that he was going to sell about a pound of marijuana to Mr. Cox based on his interview with police. So when he's found, he's shot, you know, in the parking lot of this convenience store. There's no pound of marijuana. There's no $1,150. There's no money to purchase the marijuana. And so the theory was, well, this was a robbery. You either took the marijuana or you took the money. And so it resulted in the death of the victim, Mr. Rogers, and that was the felony murder.
There's quite a bit of to-ing and fro-ing in this record about whether or not the victim had paid off his mm-hmm. supplier, Mr. McNeil, earlier mm-hmm. in the day.
Yes.
Is that right? And perhaps our appellant is saying, if that had happened, where does that leave him?
Yeah.
But the victim didn't come to the Silver, or is it White Impala, with cash.
Yeah, so the victim
on
drove...
On him because he had paid off Mr. McNeil earlier in the day. So if that were believed by a jury,
it wouldn't change the outcome.
It wouldn't change because...
And just to clarify, the victim drove a Silver Impala, and the suspect vehicle was a White Impala. It wouldn't change anything because regardless whether he had the $1,150 on his person, he was also selling the pound of marijuana for some price, and neither the pound of marijuana nor the purchase money were ever recovered. So the theory then is that, well, that was stolen.
So as to the cash, it would be if money had been paid to Mr. McNeil earlier in the day by the victim, then the state's theory is an attempted robbery of cash.
Well, no, because the defendant, presumably coming to buy the pound of marijuana, has whatever that price is for the pound of marijuana. He's supposed to pay however many hundreds of dollars. That money is not recovered. Neither is the pound of marijuana, which means that he stole the marijuana, didn't pay for it. That's a robbery.
Was the attempt then? I'm sorry, when you were saying there was an attempted robbery of what? Or marijuana?
Either. I was just saying that the instructions... also contemplated that whether maybe it was an attempted robbery, but the theory at the cash was that it was a robbery that occurred.
But is there an attempted robbery of cash and or attempted robbery of marijuana sufficient that a jury could find so?
I suppose there was marijuana still in the car, in his backpack. Maybe they thought that was that the robbery hadn't been completed and that would be the attempted robbery. I know that the primary theory of the state at trial was that the pound of marijuana was missing, as was the purchase money, so the robbery had been completed.
Thank you.
Hopefully that answered your question. Unless this court has further questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The court, and you are excused, Mr. Ralph. The court will go to the next case of the day, which is State versus Ham.